Guys, thank you so much for being here. My name is Kevin Nahai. I'm a speaker and a coach and therapist, and I write and I talk a lot about dating and relationship stuff, different issues in the mental health world, and I'm very, very honored to be speaking here. Most importantly, I am a very grateful member of the Aish community. I want to say thank you to Rabbi Jack and Shira for hosting us in their beautiful home. Thank you so much. And my heart is very warmed. I gave a talk here 2 weeks ago, and I met a bunch of new people, and I see you guys in the audience again. So thank you for coming back. And as always, to my old friends who are here, thank you guys so much for being here and supporting me.
What about your new friends?
Thank you. As for the new people who I have met tonight, thank you guys so much for being here. My intention for tonight is to talk to you for about 30 minutes about the spark in a relationship. Just before I started, I had somebody, a new friend, say to me, you know, I'm here, but I'm very skeptical of this idea, you know, that you don't need the spark. And recently I was giving a talk at Sinai, and this was something that I talked about during the talk, and an audience member shot up her hand, and she stood up, and she was all indignant and had a point to prove about how the spark is so important for her. And, you know, by the end of the talk, I was able to sort of convince her to think about things a little bit differently. So hopefully you will walk away with an elevated and opened perspective on this. And once I learned this, it completely changed the way I approached my dating life and my relationships. And it opened up an entire world of possibilities that I never knew before. So this class and this lesson really is a gift. And my hope and my prayer for everybody here is that you take this lesson, you apply it in your lives, and we all find our Besheret, we make beautiful Jewish children and grandchildren.
Oh, yeah.
And
every day.
Yes, every day. If you have any questions during the course of this, just whip out your phone and write it down. We're going to do a Q&A at the end. And the Q&A is always everybody's favorite part. So raise your hand for me. Just a second, Brian. If you have ever experienced the spark, hold on just a second. And by the spark, really what I mean is instant chemistry, connection, lust, attraction, that feeling that you can't keep your hands off the other person. You're thinking about them all the time. Raise your hand if you've experienced that. Okay. I guess the people who have not experienced that have never gone on a date. Just kidding. Okay. Now, raise your hand if you've had that experience and it has ended badly. Okay, case closed. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. That's it. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out. The point is, if it starts with a bang, it ends with a fizzle, right? So the next time you're dating somebody and you feel really attracted to them and you feel this intense connection, just remind yourself that the hotter it starts, usually the colder it ends. The hotter it starts, the colder it ends. And I'm going to tell you the three reasons why. But first, I'm going to share a personal story with you. Usually, if somebody tells you that the spark is not essential in order for you to have a good relationship, it's going to come from a rabbi. It's going to come from somebody who has very traditional dating norms. It's going to come from somebody who perhaps married their first partner, maybe your grandparents who have been together for 63 years and it was an arranged marriage back in Iran or, you know, whatever. But I'm here to tell you that I am a young, straight, regular guy. I'm a young professional. I have had sex outside of marriage. I have had the spark. I have had good relationships. I've had bad relationships. And I'm just like you, right? And the experience that I want to share with you is just one of a few that taught me this lesson the hard way. A few years ago in 2018, I met a beautiful young Ashkenazi woman, And from the moment I met her, we had the spark. We had an intense spark, an insane connection, chemistry that I had really never experienced before. And we slept together on the second date, which is something that I would never do now. And in my ignorance and in my naivete at the time, I thought that we slept together on the second date because she was so in love with me and because I was so special and because this connection was so alluring. What I didn't realize at the time is that if you are sleeping with somebody on the second date, you are likely doing that fairly often over and over again, which means that that spark is very ephemeral and doesn't actually lead to a lasting connection. That's something that I learned later. At the time, I thought, oh, this instant connection, this instant attraction, this must mean that we are perfect for each other. I was mistaking chemistry for compatibility. What ended up happening was that we dated for 3 very, very rough months. She was not the right person for me. I don't mean to speak ill of her. I brought problems to the relationship. She brought problems to the relationship. There was a lot of lying. There was a lot of deceit. I don't drink alcohol. She was an alcoholic. There were so many ways in which God was trying to show me that this relationship is not right. However, the glue that binded us together was that spark. I kept returning and I kept trying to make it work because I was so convinced, because of the pheromones and the chemistry and the connection, that I've never felt anything like this. And every time we get together, it's like magic is in the air. That was the glue that was binding us together, not our communication, not our values, not our compatibility, not a shared vision of the future, not any commonality. And as I said earlier, for me, it had a very sweet beginning and a very bitter ending. It started with a bang and it ended with a fizzle. And the worst part about it, I don't know if anybody here can relate, is that because I was so enamored by this connection, I would go home and I would ask myself, what's so wrong with me that this relationship isn't working out? And I feel so emotional when I tell this story, because if I can go back to my 26-year-old self and give him a hug and just tell him that there was nothing wrong with you, this was just the wrong match, and tell him, don't mistake chemistry for compatibility. That's one of the things that I want to share with everybody here. When you're enamored by the connection and it's just not working out, we tend to go home and give ourselves a laundry list of problems that we have found in ourselves because we're convinced that if we have this connection, the relationship must be right. And if it's not right, then we find the fault within ourselves, we blame ourselves, and that is how we accrue emotional damage and baggage from failed relationships. It's by being enamored by something that is ephemeral and doesn't really hold in the long run, and then thinking that we must be the problem, rather than dating based on values and compatibility, and then figuring out within the first few dates whether it's right or not. So the reason that I share this story with you is, again, to emphasize the point that I'm just like everybody here, right? I don't want anybody here to think that I'm trying to proselytize or speak from my high horse or, you know, we've all had this experience before. But I ask that with your help, we are a new generation of young Jews who want to be in happy, healthy relationships. And we can together if we all date smarter, not harder, right? If we all date based on our values, a shared vision of the future, compatibility, our capacity for stable relationships, love, not convenience, true connection, not chemistry, If we bind together and date this way, then all of the stories that you hear about how the dating apps are terrible and guys are jerks and women are so materialistic and this and, you know, everything that you hear, it's slowly going to start to dissipate, because each and every one of us can be a drop in the ocean. Just like blue dye that you drop into the water and it dissipates and paints the whole ocean a beautiful color. Each and every one of us can apply this lesson, as well as many others that I teach and many others that you can learn from Rabbi Jack, and we can change the dating culture. So that's my hope and my prayer for us. Reason number one why you don't need the spark. First, let me just say, the spark is nice. I like it. It's fun. It's enthralling. I don't want to convince you that it's a bad thing or that you should look down on it or purposely avoid it. But I do want to convince you that it's not necessary in order to have a stable, healthy relationship. Okay? And the first reason is that the spark masks problems and distorts judgment. The spark masks problems and it distorts judgment. Okay? So in the story that I just gave, because we had the spark, I was overlooking all of the ways in which we were infinitely incompatible, right? And my judgment of her and my judgment of the quality of the relationship was distorted. When we have the spark, it leads very quickly to physical intimacy. 2 weeks ago, I gave a whole hour-long talk on why, if you are dating for marriage, you should avoid physical intimacy until there is a spelled-out commitment, right? Some of you were here. If you weren't here, you can find the talk on YouTube. And it was a deep dive, but in order to rush into physical intimacy, there needs to be a spark. Nobody here is going to rush into something physical with somebody who they're not attracted to or they don't feel some type of connection with, right? But when we rush into physical intimacy, first of all, it's, as I said in a Instagram post, it is the number one killer of would-be promising relationships, right? And physical intimacy without an emotional connection is actually a very disconnected experience, right? So if physical intimacy is the glue that is holding the relationship together, at the flicker of the wind, that relationship is going to crumble like a house of cards. So the spark leads to physical intimacy, and if it is premature, that leads to the death of an otherwise potentially promising relationship, right? And when we get physical with somebody, we release the hormone oxytocin. For women, that makes them attach strongly. For men, it makes them protective strongly over the relationship, right? So that spark is a precursor to premature and illusory attachment. Let me say that again. The spark is a precursor to premature and illusory attachment. Because when the oxytocin is released, the woman tends to attach emotionally, and the man tends to become more protective and more possessive. That's what the hormone does in our brain, right? So that spark increases our desire to get physical, and because we are enamored and we are enthralled and we are excited, it masks our ability to see the relationship with an objective eye. Does that make sense to everyone? Crickets? Okay, I'm getting some head nods. Thank you, guys. All right? So that's the first reason. The spark masks problems that otherwise we would be able to recognize, and it distorts our judgment, and it clouds our ability. Okay? The second reason that you don't need the spark is, as I said earlier, that chemistry does not equal compatibility. Okay, chemistry does not equal compatibility. Excellent. I want you to have that in your head. Every time you go on a date and you're really into someone, chemistry does not equal compatibility. This doesn't necessarily mean we're compatible. Now, I am not encouraging you to find all of the reasons why you are not compatible. Okay? I don't want you to be sitting there on the date thinking like, you know, well, is this going to work out, and what are we going to do, and what are we going to name our child, and he has a crappy car, and I don't like her dress, and blah, 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 right? Because you can do that too. But if and when you feel that strong, instant connection, it's very important to remind yourself that it doesn't mean you guys are actually right for each other, okay? So this suggests the question, how do I know if we are right for each other, okay? So what do you guys here think compatibility is based on? What actually, we hear the word compatible, like it's a match, or you guys click, right? Raise your hand and tell me what you think compatibility is made by. Liana. Bingo, somebody has been watching my YouTube videos. Perfect. Feeling safe? Okay.
Like similar life goals.
Similar life goals? Okay.
Mutual values and belief systems.
Bingo. You're going to say values too? Okay. Excellent. Yeah. I'm very surprised. This is a very impressive and mature group. What people usually say is trust, honesty, communication, attraction,
body type,
if you're Brian,
common interest,
hey, what's up, good to see you, brother. Those are the things that people usually say, and yes, that's like stage zero, right? Stage zero of compatibility is the basics. They can't be a compulsive liar. You have to be attracted to each other. You have to have some things in common, whether it's your family background or a mutual belief in Judaism or God or whatever. So the basics just have to be there. I don't even mention the basics because to me they're kind of self-explanatory. If you don't have trust and, you know, honesty with somebody, of course you're not going to be compatible. It's sort of like self-explanatory. But stages 1, 2, and 3, the three true determinants of compatibility, 1, values. Do we have the same values, right? Not similar, not like some of them yes, some of them no. Are our values the same? Okay. What is a value? How do you know what your values are? It took me a long time to answer this question. It's a fleeting thing. As we grow and change, so do our values. But if you sit down on a date and you don't know what your own values are, it is sort of like going to the car dealership and the salesperson telling you, I don't know the year of this car, I don't know the make or model, I don't know the horsepower, I don't know how many miles it gets to the gallon, right? Basically, the car is pretty, take it or leave it, right? But the values are the substance of the person, just like all of those other stats are the substance of the car. So the way that you determine what your values are is you ask yourself this question. The behavior that I am about to enact, the decision that I am about to make, would I teach my 5-year-old son or daughter to do this? That is a value. This decision that I'm about to make, this thing that I believe in, would I teach my 5-year-old son or daughter that this is important, that this is worth paying attention to? So, Nir, would you tell your kid to marry Jewish?
Yes.
Yes, that is a value, right? Gabrielle, would you tell your son or daughter to be financially established before you get married, or would you say it doesn't matter?
Doesn't matter. I would say it doesn't matter.
You would say it doesn't matter. Boom. That is your value, right? Anybody else? Would you tell your son or daughter that you should drink until you throw up on a Saturday night?
Hell yeah.
Right? You would probably say, no, that's not a good idea, right? That means that you actually, or you might say, yeah, sure, whatever, have fun, right? That indicates your value. Now, we don't always behave in accordance with our value and break our value system. But the point is that if you and your partner have different values, the relationship is going to crumble. It's not going to last. Doesn't matter how many things you have in common, the one thing you need to have above all else is the same values. If you do have the same values, if you do believe in teaching your kids the same thing, if you do uphold and live by the same core principles, your relationship can outlast anything. Any fight, any external event, because the values are going to be the rock that holds you guys together, the glue that holds you guys together, and the rock that you can always fall back on. First determinant of compatibility is your value system. The second determinant of compatibility is having a compatible communication style, right? You have to be able to communicate effectively with one another in the style that you and the other person have. So an example of this is, if I like to communicate often, I like to check in with my partner often, I like to hear from them often, and you never check your phone, and you're quote-unquote bad at your phone, which is a myth, by the way, that doesn't exist, we're not going to be a match. You're very beautiful, but, you know. Okay? She's thinking, I don't want to go out with you anyway. Okay? If I'm the type of person who needs space when there's a conflict, and you're the type of person who needs to hash it out and talk about it right now or within a reasonable amount of time, we're not going to be a match. Because my space to you is going to feel like rejection, and your desire to communicate now to me is going to feel like clinginess and suffocation. Okay? So the thing that a lot of couples counselors miss is they bring together a couple, they have a couple in their office, and they try to teach the other person how to communicate. They try to teach the other person how to speak their language, right? Because what often happens is I'm talking to my girl in French, and she's talking to me in Chinese, right? So let's try to bridge that gap, okay? That's sort of the conventional wisdom. The issue with that is that it overlooks our default emotional constitution when it comes to communicating. Each one of us has a default, right? Based on our emotional needs, based on our attachment style, based on how our parents communicated with us when we were kids. And in a relationship, you will always default back to that particular style or mode of communicating, right? If our modes of communicating don't fit together like a puzzle piece, then it doesn't matter how much I try to teach you to speak my language and you try to teach me to speak your language, right? Our styles have to fit. They don't have to be exactly the same, but they have to be close enough. Does that make sense? Did I do something funny? No, it is the method with which you like to communicate.
Meaning verbal versus text versus whatever.
It can be verbal. It can be text. It can be how you react. It can be how often you like to communicate. Frequency, right? Are you very sensitive? Are you more straight and blunt and to the point? Right? If you're somebody who needs a soft and compassionate delivery, and I'm somebody who's like straight and to the point and tough, you're going to be very turned off every time I try to communicate with you, and I'm going to think you're annoying. You get what I'm saying? So if you and I go to couples counseling and the couples counselor tries to teach us, you know, well, you need to communicate more softly and more compassionately, and you need to be like less blunt and to the point, right? You can try to bridge that gap, but there was a problem at the outset. The problem at the outset was that my style, which is part of my inherent personality, is not compatible with yours, right? I'm not saying that's a reason to break up or a reason to divorce, but most of us, if not all of us are single, right? So I'm trying to give this information so that we can date, you know, more intelligently based on our own emotional needs. Hold on, let me do questions at the end. You mind? Okay. So that's the second determinant of compatibility. And the third one, as my genius friend Liana said, is that you feel safe in the relationship. This is one that does not get talked about enough. You've heard about values, you've heard about communication, you've heard about this, the basics, right? But the one that doesn't get talked about enough is a feeling of safety in the relationship. And unfortunately, that is not something that can concretely be described, right? With some people, you just feel safe, and it feels easy, and it flows. You're not worrying when the next text is going to come in. You're not worrying about when the next date is going to be scheduled, because you just know that it's going to flow organically. And with other people, no matter how perfect they are on paper, your grandmother set you guys up, and they have the best job, and they're from the best family, and they're Jewish, and they speak Hebrew, and they speak Farsi, and they went to Sinai, and you know everything. You just get this feeling that something is wrong, that something is off. You just have this intuitive anxiety about the match. That means that you don't feel safe in the relationship. And you can try to make yourself feel safe until the cows come home. And you certainly should talk to someone. Ask your therapist, ask your friend, you know, how do I know that this isn't just me being anxious or me being too picky or whatever, right? Don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. But if you keep returning to that feeling that something is wrong and you have this brewing, low-level hum of anxiety, even though they are perfect, that means you don't feel safe. So what I would encourage you to do is stop paying attention to how you feel when you're with the person. When you're with the person, you're eating sandwiches, you're going to the park, you're cuddling, it's all cute, everything's good. Pay attention to how you feel when you are apart from the person. When that car door slams and they drive off, are you wondering about the next text? Are you wondering about the next date? Are you wondering why they said this and why they didn't say that, right? That may be an indication that you don't feel fully safe. The way you test the safety in the relationship is by how you feel when you guys are apart, okay? All of this is to say that you have to know what truly determines compatibility, and nowhere in that whole 10-minute tirade about compatibility did I mention chemistry. Again, chemistry and connection are nice, but they do not mean compatibility. Okay? Third reason that the spark is not necessary. This is if you take nothing else away from this talk, pay attention to this. At a certain point, you guys, loving someone becomes a choice. There will come a point after a year, maybe 5 years, maybe 20 years, when you wake up next to your husband or wife and you have to make a decision, a conscious decision, to love them. There will come a point, no matter how strong your attraction is to them, no matter how deep your soul connection is, that you have to decide not to go out looking for fun with other partners, that you have to decide to keep working on your marriage and keep dating your husband or wife, that you have to decide to look for their good qualities and not the stuff that annoys the heck out of you. It doesn't matter how hot and heavy you guys are in the beginning. You could marry a supermodel. There will come a point at which loving them becomes a conscious decision and something that you will, right? There will come a point where that decision to love them is willful, because there are so many options all around us all the time. We don't live in an era where divorce is taboo, right? The divorce rate in America is 50%. And of the 50% of couples that stay together, only 20% of them are happy, are happily married. That means that if I lined up 10 people in this room, 5 of them will end up getting a divorce, and 3 of them will stay in an unhappy marriage, 2 of them will be happy, right? That's a very scary statistic. But what it indicates is that this isn't like our parents' and grandparents' generation where it was you stay together at all costs. Obviously, that philosophy has its pitfalls as well. I'm not saying that that's the best way to do things. But the point is that we live in an era where divorce is very acceptable, right? And where we think that our personal happiness is the highest and most virtuous pursuit, which is just not true, right? Once you get married to somebody, your relationship becomes about improving their lives, improving your children's lives, protecting, providing, loving, making sure that you're giving, right? If you want to get married for yourself, you're not ready for marriage. If you want to be in a relationship for yourself and what it's going to do for you, you're not ready for an adult, mature relationship, okay? So there are so many options. There are so many reasons to look outside of the relationship. And that spark is not going to be a strong enough glue to keep you together. At a certain point, you are going to have to decide to keep investing in this relationship, no matter how long you guys have been together, right? So the point of all of this is that while the spark is nice, it's not gonna be a strong enough battery to keep you guys going. At some point, it's gonna have to become a conscious decision. And you hope that you are choosing somebody who 20 years from now, 50 years from now, you will want to make that conscious decision to continue loving them, right? That's the best we can do. And of course, we do that by dating them based on our compatibility and by trying to view the relationship objectively from the outset and not masking all of the problems, okay? One final thing I want to say, what you guys find depends on what you are looking for. If you're looking for a connection, if you're looking for lust, if you're looking for the spark, you'll find it. But you're setting yourself up for a laundry list of potential issues down the road. If you are looking for values, if you are looking for safety, if you are looking for a compatible communication style, you will find it, right? But we have to set our intention from the outset, right? We have to date intelligently based on our values and based on our own emotional needs so that we can find the thing that we are looking for rather than just being a leaf that is blown in the wind, by the wind in any which direction, and then landing on an island and saying, okay, I guess I'll settle here, right? All right. Thank you guys so much. All right, question time. When you ask a question, just tell everyone your name.
Hi, I'm Alex.
Alex.
I'm curious about, one thing I learned about through dating is that we're actually not supposed to ideally look for compatibility, but more for complementary, and that even like, well, definitely our dating relationships, but our family and stuff, sometimes they complement us in different ways. So I wanted to know what you think about how to look for someone that complements us, even though they may be different from us.
So, to me, that refers more to things like family background and personality style. Your personality doesn't need to be the same, but your personalities should complement each other, kind of like the yin and the yang. Your families don't need to be the same, but your families should complement each other or at least coexist peacefully, right? But my personal view is obviously that you should date based on these tenets of compatibility. And if you have that, then I think everything else, all the complementary stuff, is workable. Thanks, Alex. Right behind you, sorry, one sec. What's your name, brother?
Lionel.
Yeah.
Do you, I guess like in light of what you said, do you think like the Orthodox Shidduch system is like the way to go dating-wise, or that's perhaps too restrictive, or what are your thoughts on that?
I can't comment on it because I've never been in it. It would be ignorant of me to say that it is good or it's bad. What I will say is that the Orthodox have an incredibly high rate of staying together. And I think the Orthodox community is like any other community. There are issues. Some people have good marriages. Some people have bad marriages. But you know, again, without saying too much because I've never experienced it.
I mean, if someone told you, like, you're going to go into dates, you're going to go into your dates blind, you're not going to touch the person until marriage, that kind of, does that sound like a good idea to you, or does that sound like a bit dangerous?
I think it's a great idea because it clearly works. Again, with the caveat that there are problems in every community. It's not perfect, right? But it clearly works. I mean, in my talk a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the Shomer Nagia thing and how it makes these incredible matches, and you know, it makes people really look for the right things. The other thing that I think the Orthodox community has going for them, and Rabbi Jack and Shira can speak to this, is that they tend, correct me if I'm wrong, but they tend to live by a code. So when you're going on a blind date, you don't have to worry about this person's family, their whole sexual history, were they in jail, you know, have they ripped people off? Because it's an insular community where they know each other, they talk to each other, they grow up with each other, and a lot of the time you can trust that the value system that they're living by is kosher, no pun intended, right? So I think it makes it a lot easier. Whereas in the secular world, like I said, you could think this person is the God's gift to the earth, and then you find out that, like, you know, last week they were indicted for like federal wire fraud or whatever. It's like anything goes in the secular community. It's the Wild West, right? I'm sure we've all had like terrible Tinder stories and, you know, Hinge stories. So yeah. Tell me. Yes. Sorry, you had a question. What's your name?
Amit. Yeah, so I was wondering about, you know, how you were saying about trying to get compatibility, but sometimes you don't want to be playing the game of, like kind of picking and choosing, or you're too specific, or, like, you know, kind of overthinking it. So where would a compromises, like, come in, or would there be any kind of things that you would be thinking to yourself, I should be compromising this, or this is like where I should draw the line?
Great question. So everybody, when you go home tonight or tomorrow morning, take out a piece of paper and write down WWW. That stands for want, willing, and won't. Okay? So what you want are your must-haves. And you should have like maybe 3 or 4. Don't make it a list of 25 because then you're working against yourself. Okay? I want somebody who is Jewish. I want somebody who has a very kind and giving heart. I want somebody who is perhaps a certain physical type. I mean, it's not what I would recommend to look for, but whatever floats your boat, right? You're willing is where you're willing to compromise. I'm willing to date someone who is previously engaged or married. It's not ideal, but I'll handle it. I'm willing to date somebody perhaps whose mother was a convert, right? Maybe for you, you'd rather that they not be a convert, but is that going to make you, you know, kick them out of the pool? Perhaps not, okay? And then your won't are your no-nos, your deal breakers. I will not date somebody who is a smoker. I will not date somebody who is culturally Jewish but never goes to shul. I will not date somebody who doesn't keep kosher, whatever it is, right? As long as you have 3 or 4 in each category, you should be good. That's sort of my rule of thumb, okay? Usually when people do this exercise, the list of wants is like 18, the list of won'ts is 15, and the list of willing is like 3, okay? And that's how you know that you're being a little bit too picky and you're not willing to compromise enough. Okay. One other point about this whole compromise thing. I hate the word picky. I'm standing up because the word picky bugs me. Okay? The number of times people have told me, including my friends, oh, you're so picky. Oh, you shouldn't. Why do you look for that? Oh, no, you need to date this type of girl. You need to date that. Okay? Every single one of you is allowed to have your preferences. You want a short girl? Date a short girl. You want a tall guy? Date a tall guy. If you want someone whose family has money, you are allowed to want that, okay? What you're not allowed to do is have so many preferences that you price yourself out of the dating market. That's where you get screwed. I have helped 93 people get engaged or married in the last 4 years. Not one of them did I ever tell them, you're not allowed to want that. No, don't say you want to date a lawyer. If you want to date a lawyer, you're making, you know, it's what about the mechanic? What about the accountant? Some people tell me they want to date a lawyer, and that's one of their wants. Okay, fine. Do you have 25 other wants? Now you're in trouble. Is dating a lawyer so important to you that you're willing to have it as one of your three or four? Okay, fine, right? That means you better be willing to compromise on a whole bunch of other stuff. So I really want to empower you and help you believe that you can have the things that you want. You just can't have so many of them that you're not willing to compromise on other areas. It's all about priorities. Does this make sense? Okay.
Can I just suggest?
Of course.
It's very important. When you write this, that's okay. When you write this list of things that you want or don't want or must haves, you'll see that it really tells you what kind of person you are. You must have a Lamborghini. Yeah, I'm just giving you that. Right? So the more external a person is, the more you realize your must haves are external also. And it's not about being picky or not picky. It's almost like a child who is playing a game, a toy, you know, and he gets older. At the beginning, that toy was everything to him. As he gets older, the toy is not even interesting to him anymore. It's not because he chose that he doesn't like the toy. His life is meaningful to a point that the toy has no interest to him anymore. Meaning a person needs to ensure, if people ask me, what's the greatest thing about dating or what's the most important thing about dating? It's about growing yourself. Because the greater of a person you become, it's not that you become more picky, and it's not that you're saying, I want or don't want as much. You have to write this list, by the way, must have some. But it's more about what's important and what's really valuable. And that's where dating really takes place, is where I have a lot of personal growth, internal reflection of what's really important. You know, why do you like her? Because we both jog together. just because you do things that are similar doesn't mean that you're compatible. You just do similar things. I don't know if that's, I wasn't here, I was on political. But just because you do things that are similar is not yet an indication of compatibility. It might be in your eyes because that's a very mundane thing. What is it that I really want? I need to ask myself, what is it that I really want? And some people say, I want a cute girl. Okay, that's important. Of course, you've got to be attracted. You don't want to wake up to someone that you really are not attracted to. So that's important. But is there anything on a deeper level? Like, what's the depth? What are the wants? Okay, so that's my...
Beautiful. Brand. 100%. When I first made my WWW list, again, there was a lot of stuff. There was like 20 stuff in the must-haves and 20 things in the no-nos and not very much in the compromise area. Now I've really solidified it. You ask me what are my must-haves, boom, there are four of them. You ask me what are my willing, boom, there are five of them. You ask me what are my no-nos, again, there are four. I can tell you like that. Every 6 months I sit down and I rewrite this list to calibrate how I'm growing and how I'm changing. Very powerful exercise. One sec, Leo. Yes, sir. What's your name? Tomer!
Do you think there's a gap between the theory and what happens when you're put up to the test of reality? Because in theory, you could sit and write, yeah, I'm willing to compromise, and then you get in a situation where you're put up to the test and it blows up in front of you. So, I mean, obviously, that means you need to recalibrate, but like, how do you stop lying to yourself about what you're willing to compromise?
So it's very important to make this list when you're single, and when your judgment is not distorted by some cute girl in front of you who you're dating or messing around with or whatever, right? If you make this list when you're like pretty single, that's how you know that it's a gold standard because you wrote it with clarity. Then if you start dating somebody and she has all of your no-nos, she has none of your must-haves, and you have to compromise on everything in the middle, right? You have to compare it to your gold standard. And you have to stop kidding yourself, as you said, Tomer, right? Now, have you ever heard people say, I thought I wanted all these things, and the person I ended up with was the exact opposite? All the time, right? Okay. This is not in contradiction to what I'm saying. My own sister, when she was 23, she met a guy who she swore up and down for 3 months while he was pursuing her, I'll never go out with you. Like, forget it, Michael. It's not happening. They've been together for 10 years and they have 2 babies and a beautiful house in Encino. So, yes, it's true that sometimes the thing that we think we're going to end up with or the thing that we're going for ends up being completely different. However, the values were there. The compatibility was there. It just came in a different package. You thought you were going to date a Persian Jew, you ended up with a Moroccan. You thought you were going to date somebody who was a lawyer, you ended up with a school teacher. You thought you were going to date somebody who's really into fitness and yoga, you ended up with a book nerd, right? The package may be different, and that's what people are talking about when they say, oh, I ended up with someone who is the complete opposite. If you end up with somebody who's the complete opposite of you in terms of values, it's not going to work, right? And also, speaking of things not working, this is sort of a dark thought, but it is true. Every time you guys see one of your friends get married, and you're like, oh, I'm the only single one left. I'm like the last one of my friend group. Everybody else is getting married. Just remind yourself that you don't know what's going to happen to that marriage in 10 years. Marriage is not the goal. A happy, stable relationship that lasts is the goal. So if all of your friends got married right now around the age of 28, 26, 30, 32, whatever, and you're like, damn, I'm the last one left. This is so sad. Come back to me in 15 years. Tell me how they're doing. Right? You'll have a very different perspective.
They're chilling.
Hopefully they'll be chilling. God willing, they'll be chilling. Lionel.
So how do you differentiate between attraction and the spark? What's the difference? Because I feel like what you said about you don't need the spark, but someone can misinterpret that as you don't need to be attracted to the person. Which I don't think you're saying.
No, let me clear the record. You do need to be attracted to them, as Rabbi Jack said. Okay? But being attracted to them means that when you look at them, whether it's a guy or a girl, you think they're beautiful. The spark means when you look at them, you think they're hot. Does that make sense?
Is it just like, don't act on your desire to like touch them and things like that? Like, is that kind of the message you're going for?
That's one message. As I said, if you have the spark, it's nice. I'm not trying to demonize the spark or say that it's always going to lead to bad things. But yeah, first of all, certainly don't act on it. Secondly, if you feel like you can't keep your hands off the person, you're thinking about them all the time, you have butterflies in your stomach, you can't wait to see them, it impedes with your functioning at work because you're checking your texts every 5 minutes because you're just obsessing over them, it's usually an indication that that's not an adult, healthy, mature relationship that's going to last, right? So just remind yourself, the hotter it starts, usually the colder it ends. Okay. One sec, let me get Liana. Tell me.
So you talk about like somebody going to find the spark and the connection and how like it's wrong for them to go and do that, but like don't you think it's a little bit like a deeper thing inside of them if they're like wanting to chase that spark and connection of something unhealthy, like deep inside of them, they have to work out something that's
I don't think it's wrong of a person to date based on the spark. There was a time that I did that. But I think it indicates where their priorities lie.
Right?
That's usually an indication that they haven't attended a lot of these types of seminars. You know, maybe they haven't applied the lessons that they've learned. They haven't done sort of introspective work. They're not really dating intelligently. So great point. Robin. Oh, thanks, Robin.
Can you reignite a spark?
Thanks, guys.
If there was a spark and then, let's say, it fizzled out, but then later down the line, can you reignite that spark? Can it happen again? Is there the possibility of that?
Why did it fizzle out in the first place?
This spark was too strong.
Well, if you had a connection with somebody and then it fizzled out, let's assume it fizzled out for a good reason, right? What would be your desire to go back to it, right? Usually when we have the desire to go back to someone, it's because we've pedestalized them. We are idolizing them. We are making them out to be something in our mind that they aren't really, or we are dating their potential, right? Oh, but we could have this thing, and they could be this. If only I could fix all of their childhood trauma from their mother abandoning them when they were 7, right? I can show them what true love is, and then they will love me forever, and they'll need me forever, right? So I speak from personal experience. You know, I used to be like, Captain Save a Girl. You know, like I was driving my boat through the ocean, finding like all of the drowning girls and like picking them up and trying to fix them and make everything, you know, throwing everyone a lifeline. And then I'm standing at the helm, like Leonardo DiCaprio, like reeling them in, you know, and like then we go on 3 dates and they never talk to me again. So, Natan.
Out again, and the other person is hesitant to reach out again. So, what do you think you should do in that situation? Do you feel like, you know, I feel like as a guy, I feel like I should reach out again or keep trying, or do you feel like because the conversation is dying out, then it's not really meant to be? Let's say?
Always call out the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. Sit the person down over a coffee and say, or call them and say, hey, I'm feeling like our communication has really died down. Is there something I'm doing that's turning you off? Are you not interested anymore? 9 times out of 10, what you'll find is that the other person is as much in their own head as you are, and they're thinking the exact same thing. Just one of you had to be brave enough to bring it up and have the slightly uncomfortable conversation, okay? Here's why this is so important to do this, Nathan. If you are married, when you are married, Bezrat Hashem, right?
Amen.
Dude, I'm not married, I don't have kids, but I'm sure Rabbi Jack and Shira can attest to this. There are going to be so many times that you're going to have to sit down and have uncomfortable conversations. The happiest couples sit down for 60 minutes a week on a Sunday or whatever and ask each other, what am I doing that's annoying you? What do you need more of from me? How can I be a better partner? How can I make your life easier? Statistically, the happiest couples are the ones who practice that. And it's an uncomfortable conversation to have. I don't want to sit down with my girlfriend and ask her, what's pissing you off about me? You know? But you have to practice having those uncomfortable conversations from the outset to take away the fear factor. Because once you're actually together, you're going to have a lot of them. Yeah. Let's take.
If you're married long enough, you know. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's take 2 more questions because it's a school night and my mom doesn't let me be out on school nights. What's your name?
Jess.
Jess.
So I understand the aspect of the spark isn't necessarily the same thing as there's the compatibility there. I get that part, but I guess I'm having trouble wrapping around the, okay, what if on paper, like, the values are there? Like, on paper, it's like, oh, this should be something, but it's just, if there's not a spark, it's just kind of like you're like bored, like it's just not, like on paper, sure they're fine, but like how do you say like, oh, the spark's not important? It's kind of just boring otherwise.
So I'm certainly, you do need to have a connection with the person, but connection is not that lustful, obsessive spark. You get what I'm saying? You do have to find them interesting. You do have to find them attractive. You do have to feel that your conversations are engaging, for sure, you know? Just because somebody's perfect on paper does not mean that they are right for you, right? And at the same time, just because you have the spark with somebody doesn't mean that they are right for you, okay? So yes, you need to have that basic attraction, a feeling that you are connected to them, a feeling that you want to grow with them. I'm certainly not suggesting that you just find someone who's perfect and then put up with it, okay? But there are so many people, Jess, who date based on the spark. They date based on how connected they are, rather than, do we have the things that are going to allow us to build a life together? You don't love someone because of how attracted you are to them and how much chemistry you have with them. You love someone based on what you give to them and the life you build together. So I'm not suggesting that you should be bored out of your mind by your partner, but I am certainly suggesting that you should look more at, do I want to give to this person? And do we have the building blocks to build a life together? Because again, at some point, loving them is going to become a choice.
Mm-hmm. May I ask a follow-up?
Of course.
How soon is too soon to kind of ask about those values to see if you're on the same page?
First date.
Yeah?
First date. People are going to tell you, I wish I was sitting down so I could stand up again. First date. Okay?
I agree.
All these dating gurus and this crap online, it's pure unadulterated crap. Keep the first date light. Let's sit here and talk for 60 minutes about how good the beans are. Oh, I've never had beans like these. Oh, so, did you check the weather? It's going to be raining in LA tomorrow. It never rains in LA. It's like, okay, let's get to the point, man. All right? Like, I was 34 years old 7 years ago, and I ain't getting any younger. Can we figure out if we're compatible? You know? No, I'm being facetious, but truly, first date. You don't have to ask them, so when do you want to get married? So how many kids do you want? Do you want them with me? Do you know that my grandmother was diabetic? Is that going to be an issue for you? I'm only 5'8", and you're only 5'2". I think our kids are going to be short. You know, but ask, what was your childhood like? What's one thing you love that your parents did? And what's one thing you would like to do differently with your own kids? Do you keep kosher? Amazing. How come? Do you think you would want to have a kosher home in the future? Where are you kind of in your dating journey? What are like your intentions at the moment, right? These questions, these are not like heavy duty questions, okay? No promising relationship ever ended over asking the wrong question. If you ask someone, so what are your intentions? And they run for the hills, Baruch Hashem. If that question freaks them out, you are so lucky, go home and get on your knees and thank God that he removed that person from your life. Follow what I'm saying? So again, like, you don't bombard the person with, you know, all sorts of your dating anxiety, but don't be afraid to ask serious questions. It's all about the delivery. Ask them with levity, with vulnerability, suggest some things about yourself, get to know each other. One more question. Well, you guys want to duke it out?
We'll be quick.
Okay. Let's do both. Alex.
What do you think about the state of our generation versus our parents? You're saying this 50% divorce rate. Do you think things are getting better? Where it stands now? What do you think of the relationships and the more hope than our parents?
I don't know if it's better or worse. I think that our parents' generation, the idea that you should stay together at all costs has a lot of pitfalls. There are a lot of unhappy marriages there. You know, in my grandparents' generation, I don't know if this is like a thing in Iran, but like all of the men cheated on their wives and their wives just like kind of dealt with it. And I don't think that that's necessarily healthy. But our generation, where we're constantly paralyzed by this paradox of choice, of having so many choices and thinking that divorce is just so common that it's like not a huge deal. It's like, whatever, you move on. That's very unhealthy also. So I think we're just dealing with different challenges. But here's one thing that I will say that is very indicative of the future for our generation. Is it okay? Do you guys want to head out?
No.
Everyone's okay? Anyone who wants to head out, please, don't let my blabbering keep you past your bedtime. One thing, Alex, is there's one way in which our generation got screwed that we all have to band together to overcome, okay? Our parents and our grandparents got the message that you find a great mate and then you build your lives together. That was the message that was perpetuated to them and that they downloaded. The message that our generation has received is you build your life, you build your finances, your security, you do your exploring, you do your wild phase, you know, maybe you become a stripper for a couple of months, then you grow out of it. I'm kidding. But our generation got the message that you build your life and then you find a partner, okay? That's a very dysfunctional, toxic belief. This idea that you have to be perfect on your own, you have to be financially established, you have to know your career.
At that point, then you tell the person what I need you for. And I get all of it.
Exactly, right? Now you built this whole thing together and you're basically just like, you know, seeing who wants to come for the ride at that point. Also, like, I'm 30 years old. I'm nowhere near my peak, you know? Back in my parents' generation, it was, in the 80s, it was not only much easier, but it was very common for a 28-year-old man to be married with two children with a home, right? So if I'm going to wait until I can afford a home or several homes, my career is at its peak, you know, and now I'm ready to get married and start a family, I could be 35, I could be 40, who knows? So that's a message that we really have to overcome, right? Don't wait until you're established, whatever that means, to find a good mate. Find a good mate and build your lives together.
Okay, thanks.
What's your name, brother?
My name is Jacob.
Jacob.
I have a question about what is the spark. Is it, you know, is it purely physical, or would you say that you don't have the spark if you go on a date with someone and, you know, maybe you think they're hot, but it's not, the conversation sucks. Would that be a case of no spark, or is that not connected?
The spark is a feeling of obsession, in a word, right? You're obsessed with their looks physically. You're obsessed with them emotionally. Being around them like gives you butterflies. It's like nothing you've ever felt before, right? Whereas a connection means that you look into their eyes and you're very interested by them and you want to keep getting to know them, but it's not distorting your judgment. It's not, right? You're not a slave to your emotions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, guys. If anybody wants to talk more, follow me on Instagram. Send me a message. We can talk privately. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.